Why? Something to do with all the American policy, I think. Yeah, I never keep track of it. Yeah, so suddenly then now there's a new things to worry about. Which handphone should I get? Yeah. Compared to other things that people do or use to manage their emotions, meditation is doesn't seem very attractive, you know, especially when you're distressed. Like compared to, this is my favorite, comfort eating. No, it's so easy, right? You just open a bag of potato chip, a big one, okay? Not those tiny little one, all right? A really big one. Just open it, and then park yourself in front of some screen, you know, and then you just chow on it, you know. It's so easy, right? You know, and you are doing something to manage the difficult feelings and emotions. Compared to meditation, meditation cannot compare, right? Sit there, and the first thing you think about will be the things that worry you or upset you, right? So, and also with comfort eating, you have immediate pleasant reward, right? You mustn't pay too much attention to what you are eating, okay? Because if you pay too much attention, it's no longer comforting, yeah. Or what some people do is, of course, drinking, you know, alcohol. One of the things that I'm more likely to do is to indulge in computer games, you know, just play for hours and hours and hours. So compared to those other activities that a lot of us use to manage our distressing emotions, meditation is a very unattractive choice and option, you know, and because the result is not immediately apparent, say, oh, I meditate, I'll be calm. Usually it's not true, okay? You need to do a lot of meditation and you still may not be calm, right? So that's why, you know, I perfectly understand if you were to abandon meditation or the first sign of distress. So if that happened to you, please don't blame yourself, okay? No need to feel guilty about it. Everybody do it, does it, yeah. Except some exceptionally determined people, including myself. I also abandoned it. No, I meditate. I don't feel like meditating. Yeah, when I'm very stressed. So not to be too distressed if you stop meditating, because it would be just like what we learn during a meditation session. If you get distracted, there's always another opportunity for you to come back to what you're meditating, come back to the breath, come back to loving kindness. Likewise, outside of meditation, if you abandon your meditation practice, don't be too upset, because there will be another opportunity when you can always come back to meditation. In fact, it's very easy to come back to meditation. You know, you just have to stop talking and just turn your attention and feel your breath, and you're already back in meditation. Okay, there's no long preparation needed. Yeah. So I thought to mention it on this last class, you know, just in case after, which is actually very likely to happen after this course, you stop meditating. Yeah, don't be too surprised by it. Or when you most need a method to help you to manage difficult feelings, you find that you don't really want to meditate. Right? I'm just trying to tell you that you are quite normal. Right? And don't need to feel too guilty about it. Which is why while we are feeling quite okay, and we are still interested in meditation, it's good to give it some time and build up a new habit, a habit of coming back to meditation and deepening your understanding of what meditation can or cannot do for you. Then, subsequently, you might find that your meditation practice can benefit you. Benefit you while you are meditating, and even when you are not meditating, some of the qualities that you build up during your meditation may surprisingly arise to support you. You know, support you when you are going through stressful times or when you find yourself in a distressing situation. You might find that there's something changed in the way you deal with it. You know, you may become more aware. You might find that you remember different things, different qualities may come up within you spontaneously to support you, right? So that's why when things are going well, when you're not too busy, maybe give some time to cultivating your own meditation practice. right? So the last few weeks I have been presenting two different tracks of two different kind of types of meditation. So this first type, I started off introducing you to a simple meditation using the breath. Yeah, asking you to come back to the breath, and especially your out-breath. Make use of the out-breath, and where you feel yourself breathing out, remind yourself in your mind with the magic word, release. Right? And I present this meditation with the idea called ventilation. Ventilation means help things to move, you know, so they don't get very stuffy, don't get very stagnant, very stuck. You know? So emotions are a bit like this. Emotions are always changing, but we do easily get stuck in our emotional reactions and responses. We find ourselves repeatedly revisiting the distressful situation, the distressing thoughts. And if you do that, of course, then your emotions keep coming back. You keep triggering the same emotions. And over a period of time, you find yourself very much, you're very stuck in that particular type of emotional reactions, right? Although in actual fact, it does change. You don't notice it so much. You keep feeling that, oh, why am I always angry? Why am I always anxious or nervous? Why am I always upset? Or if you're going through grief, you know, you feel overwhelmed by sadness and loneliness, and it seems to go on and on and on. Yeah. So ventilation is trying to help you to not keep triggering the same reactions, and also learn to, you know, allow the emotions to come and go. They do come and go. Yeah. So you become more aware of the changes in your emotions, and you can facilitate that just by simply reminding yourself in meditation now and then to just come back to the breath, and especially the out breath, just to remind yourself that you're going to breathe out anyway. So when you breathe out, think of it as an opportunity to let go, to release something. You know? Not so much to push them away, to get rid of them, but just allow some of those thoughts or memories or sensations, maybe they can just flow away with the breath. Right? So that's the first type of meditation I introduce. Then the next two sessions I introduce another method called tongling, also to use with the breath. Tongling is Tibetan, means taking and giving. And there, if you remember, those who attend, I invite you, as you breathe in, to imagine you take in or let in to your awareness, so that you can, the difficult experiences, or different unpleasant aspects of yourself, or could be others, yeah, out of compassion, just let it in, you know, out of compassion for yourself, you breathe in and imagine you let in, you know, maybe you have been going through a very stressful time at work, so you imagine in your mind, you recollect that work situation, and you breathe in, you let into your awareness a little bit of that, those feelings, those upsetness, those thoughts that you may have. You breathe it in, you can give it a form, you know, like imagine them in the form of dark smoke. Or if it's associated with certain feelings that you feel very burdened, you know, or very cluttered, or very stuck, you breathe that feeling into your own heart, you know, out of compassion, you know, wishing, or may I be free of this suffering and the causes of this suffering. So you let into your awareness those difficult experiences. And it can also be someone else, you know, someone you know going through a hard time or struggling with cancer. You can also breathe that in, you know. Also, as if you are allowing yourself to feel another's pain, another's difficulties, out of compassion for them as well, yeah. So you breathe that in, and then after a while, I ask you to switch and focus on your out-breath. As you breathe out, imagine you send out or you share something really positive or uplifting or maybe helpful, and you breathe that out and imagine it going into, could be yourself in a difficult situation, could be someone that you care about, and again, imagine it in a form like light or a feeling of love warmth or whatever, yeah, and breathe it in. Just imagine like putting something positive back into a difficult situation, you know. So this kind of, again, a bit like ventilation, right? Moving things around. Moving not only your fixed idea about a situation, also your fixed feelings, your fixed opinion about that situation, you know. So moving it around and also bringing forth other type of emotions in yourself, the emotional response of compassion and loving kindness, you know. So that, which usually we forgot about them. When we're very distressed, very stressed, we forgot about compassion, we forgot about kindness, we are just trying our best, like as if our survival is at stake, right? So we are in this sort of survival mode, you know, we just try to survive and get rid of the things that are harming us, or hang on for dear life onto things that we feel are very important to us. So we actually become very clingy, you know, in those states, and we forgot about all this ideal of how to be loving, how to be kind, how to be compassionate, you know, all those just gone out of our mind, right? So we can bring those back, because, and they actually help us to deal with the situation, you know, not only towards ourselves, but also towards those that we love. This is very funny, right? You know, someone you love, you care about, yeah, you know they're in a difficult situation, and you try very hard to be helpful, right? Then you get very resentful of them, you know. Say, I keep giving you all this advice, why you don't listen to me? You know? And then what you do, we nag, and nag, and nag, until the person can't stand you. Yeah, yeah, keep your love to yourself, you know. Stay away from me. I find your love is a burden to deal with, yeah. So that is not uncommon, right? In the, when we try, we are trying with good intentions, yeah. But yet, for the receiving end of your good intention, might find that it is the absolutely worst thing, right? So often they say, I like this saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. No, if you have a good intention, drive you to suicide. Can't stand it. Yeah. So sometimes it's not just good intention, but also hey, what kind of attitude we bring with it and how we go about, you know, showing our love, you know, how to be helpful to someone. In fact, sometimes the funny thing is, to be helpful, occasion, you don't even need to say anything, right? Because I've been teaching Buddhism, so occasionally people drop in and tell me about their troubles. And not being a professional therapist, I don't really know how to do, so I just listen. I can solve their financial problem, I cannot mend their roof, no, I cannot fix their broken relationship, you know, and I cannot take away their illnesses, their pain. So all I can do is to listen. And it's quite surprising that they find it helpful. I don't know why it's helpful, but anyway, you know, they find it helpful. And though I'm glad at least I can be of some help to them. Yeah. So tongling is another way of ventilating, moving our emotions, but not just moving them, but see if we can invoke more positive response of compassion and kindness, right? So I hope that doesn't sound like the first time you hear them. So that's what I've been talking about over the past few sessions. So today, to conclude this first type of meditation, I want to introduce a third way to meditate. Very simple, but also from that point of view, quite difficult to do. And the underlying idea I want to present is one that is called not identifying with our emotions. Not identifying, not get too caught up and so entangled with our emotional reactions. You know? So we may experience anger, may arise, even if we don't want to be angry. We may have moments of hatred, you know, we really hate somebody, or we can get very jealous, or we get very anxious, you know, a lot of anxiety. So we have all sorts of different emotional responses, and some are quite unpleasant. And one of the ways to work with them is to not identify with them, not feel that. So I may have moments of depression. I feel very down, very depressed, very unmotivated. No, but don't feel that, oh, that is who I am, and I will always be like that. No, I will always be depressed. I will always be angry. I will always be sad. No, I will always be lonely. No, if you think like that means you fully identify with a particular emotions, and you kind of like exaggerated them. You fix them, and then you get very stuck in them. You get very caught up in them. So one of the main idea, at least from the Buddhist perspective of working with our emotional states, is to recognize that, you know, although we have those emotions, they're not me, you know, at least not all the time, not me, you know, not to identify with them, not to fixate on them, and to recognize that emotions come and go, they are impermanent, you know. So occasionally we do get angry, occasionally we do get depressed, occasionally we feel sad, you know, but it can change, and there are other feelings, other emotions, other states can arise. So not to be so caught up in them. So a good analogy which we're going to use is think of the weather. You know, the weather, although a lot of people, I also feel sometimes Singapore seems to be perpetually hot, right? But there are also occasions where it's cold, then it's humid, then, you know, usually it's humid, but sometimes it's dry, and sometimes it's very humid, and sometimes we have sunny days, and sometimes there's a drizzle, and occasionally there's a thunderstorm. Right? Weather is a good analogy for emotions. You know, it's, weather is a complex thing, but it arises due to different causes and conditions. Likewise, our emotional states are like that. You know, there are sunny days, wow, we're so loving, so positive, so optimistic. Then there are also dark days, right? We are like in the bottom of a pit, we are pessimistic, we are unmotivated, you know, we are overwhelmed with a lot of dark feelings. And then, you know, then it changes, you know? So it's ever changing. And so in meditation, we learn, you know, to not identify with the weather-like emotions, but to be aware that, like for example, this is a very classic Tibetan Buddhist image, that the sky, the blue sky, well, these days they are more blue, lah, no? You know, when there's no haze from forest fires, you know, the blue sky is behind all these things, you know? So there can be a storm, and yet behind the storm, beyond the storm, the blue sky remains, right? The space, the sky is not damaged by the passing weather conditions, right? So likewise, our mind, our awareness is like the sky, is like space. Within that awareness, there is changing conditions, different emotions, different feelings, different kind of thoughts, moods. But all this can change, you know. So long as you remember that space, that sky, you can allow and you can facilitate the change to happen naturally, and you don't get fixated in them. You don't get stuck in a particular emotional formations. And then that also helps them to move quicker, you know, to change. And when the storm passes, ta-da, sunny weather is back again. Right? When the low mood passes, you find hope again, you find spaciousness, you find that the mood becomes lighter. Yeah. Right. So that's just the idea behind it. How to do it is a bit difficult. Yeah. So I call this, this is my term, I pick it up from somewhere, is to come back to be in touch with your aware space. It's like your awareness, your mind is like space, like very open, empty, right? So allow a lot of movement, a lot of things to come and go. You know? So even when there's a storm, you know, but the storm happens in the space, right? The storm can pass. And sometimes in between storms, you can find that there are also gaps, you know. And when the storm passes, the space is still there. The sky is still there. You know, the mind, the space-like awareness or mind is still there. So it's to come back to be in touch with that space. You know. Then you can, even though there's a storm and you cannot stop it, you can be patient, you say, oh, well, all right, you know, I'm depressed, you know, maybe 30 minutes later, maybe things will be different, you know. So you don't have so caught up in it, and it also helps to ventilate things, help things to move along smoother and faster, right? So how to get in touch with your aware space? As usual, with me, everything has to do with the breath. So you come back to your breath, right? Come back to the breath. And now, not only do you notice the breath, but you try to remind yourself, the breath or breathing happened when there is space. Right? I breathe in, the air from outside, this outer space, flows into my lungs, or the inner space. So there is space, right? Then I breathe out, you know, I release. So what is inside in my lungs flow out into the vast space outside. Right? So I breathe in from space, I breathe out into space. And with the breath is a bit easier to recognize at first. Come back to the breath. And via the breath, see if you can also be aware that breathing happens in space. When this meditation, you try it later, when it goes well, sort of goes well, you notice that you become aware that your awareness, your attention is like, you fill up the whole of space. There's a aware space. And inside the aware space, things happen. The breath is flowing in and out, different bodily sensations, thoughts, images, memories come and go, you know, within this vast empty space of the mind. Right? And of course, at first it's hard to figure out what that is. So that's why I say, first you do is you remember to come back to the breath. Like what we used to do, come back to the breath. Now and then just remind yourself, release as you breathe out. But as you settle into the meditation, you can start to notice all these things seems to happen, must happen in a space, right? You know, thoughts might appear in some kind of space, emotions, bodily sensations, even the breath seems to happen inside a space. Yeah. And so I'm asking you to get in touch with that space, to remember that there is lots and lots of space, right? And so that you can see your emotional response from a different perspective, from a wider perspective, right? Enough of me talking. Let's try it and see what happens. And then if you don't notice space, then it's all right. Like, it's like you're in a tiny little HDB flat, very cluttered and very close in. Then you notice the opposite of it, the lack of space. Like you are all caught up and, you know, lots of stuff happening and, you know, you feel the opposite. You feel that there is no space. Yeah. So even that is a good realization, right? So, anyway, let's give it a try. So, as usual, the three-step process. So first, try to acquire a comfortable seat for yourself. So that includes finding a physical posture that is most supportive of your meditation, one that allows your back, your spine to be upright in a natural way. You know, you don't feel that you need to tighten your back muscles just to straighten your spine. It's a bit like standing up. When you stand up, naturally your spine is upright in a natural way. So in the same way, just allow that spine to assume its natural position. Place your hands or arms in such a way to allow your shoulders to be relaxed. You can rest your hands on your both knees or place them one on top of the other and rest them in your lap, or any other position that is comfortable for you. I normally suggest people to just close their eyes completely. Of course, you can always do whatever you want. If you have other ways of meditating, that is also fine. So this is the first step, acquiring a seat for your body and mind in meditation. So see if you can become aware of sensations at the points of contact between your body and your chair or cushion, your body and the ground. And really allow yourself to feel that beneath you, your body is resting on something very solid, firm and stable. You can rest the entire weight of your body on the ground, on your seat, in this posture. And that your body is well supported, balanced, and safe in this posture. Think that, given time, your body can automatically adapt itself to the posture, start to loosen up, to unwind, to release unnecessary tensions, tightenings, and contractions. And then for the second step, we are going to give our body and mind some time to settle down, some time to make the transition, to set aside things unrelated to the meditation and come fully into the meditation practice. And to do that, we can make use of our breath, our natural breath. So see if you can become aware of the breath sensations at this moment. Allow yourself to feel your in-breath and your out-breath. So normally I don't insist that people focus on the breath at a particular spot. Instead, I suggest you become aware of all the different breath sensations within your body. You may notice breath sensations first around the nostrils, where you can feel the air flow in and out of your body. You may become aware of the movements of your chest as you breathe in and out, a sensation of expansion and contraction. And then some of us may feel the breath going all the way down to the abdomen, a movement of rising and falling of the abdomen. So see if we can rest your attention on this wave-like movement of breath sensations, flowing in and out, expanding, contracting, rising and falling. And see if you can give special attention to your natural out-breath, breathing out. Quite often we can feel a subtle sense of relaxation that comes along with it. Breathing out, we release the stale air in our lungs. And you may want to make use of this opportunity with each out-breath to release. Breathing out, given time, maybe your body can release some of the unnecessary tension or tightness, and maybe the mind can release or set aside thoughts, memories, images not related to your meditation. Coming back to the breath, and just think that there's no need to focus on the breath, no need to force your attention to stay with the breath, because you can always come back to it. Even if you are distracted, when you realize it, you can choose to just come back to the breath, reconnect with the breath sensations, and as you breathe out, remind yourself to release. And then moving on to the third step, to deepen your meditation. Here I invite you not only to come back to the breath, if you do find yourself distracted and other things happen to catch your attention, come back to the breath. And on top of that, see if you can get in touch with the sense of space, to get in touch with your aware space. Breathing in and out, see if you can feel that the breath takes place in a wider space. You breathe in, air flows from a large space into yourself. And as you breathe out, you release stuff into the great space. So breath sensations happen within your aware space, coming and going, flowing in and out, rising and falling. So coming back to the breath, coming back to your aware space, you may notice other things happening in that space. You may notice bodily sensations happening within your aware space, tensing up, tightening, relaxing, softening. Thoughts come and go within a space. Images, words, memories, fantasies. They happen also within your aware space. So instead of being caught up in words, in images, caught up in trying to focus on the breath or other sensations, see if you can take a step back, adopt a wider perspective, and come back to your aware space. So coming back to your meditation, coming back to the breath, if you can extend that awareness into space, you will notice within that aware space, things come and go, like sound. Sound of the aircon humming in the background, reverberating within space. So think of other things, sensations, thoughts, images also happen in space. Bodily sensations, pleasant or unpleasant, seems to happen within this wider space, and within which there may be thoughts, words, maybe images, memories, some inner commentaries. So all happen within that space.
So coming back to the breath, and via the breath, become aware of the space, your aware space. See if you can, although it can be a bit difficult if it's the first time you try this type of meditation. See if you can relax into it. See if you can use less effort. Don't try so hard. There's nothing to focus strongly on. Just relax into that space and allow things to just come and go. Because you are the aware space and you will not be harmed, not be damaged by passing thoughts, feelings, sensations. See if you can relax into that space. Okay, so that's about 20 minutes of meditation. And so this first type of meditation that I've been introducing is to help you, help things to move along, to change. It's not so much about stopping a certain emotions or not to ever to experience that emotions. No, we're not trying to block certain emotional response. We're not trying to tell ourselves, oh, I must never be anxious, or I never be angry, or never be sad, never be depressed. No, but instead, it's this idea that, okay, sometimes I'm depressed, sometimes I'm sad, sometimes I'm upset, sometimes I'm anxious, but that's okay, no, because those feelings, those emotions can come and they can go. No, and also, if they do happen, maybe they don't hang around so long. No. Maybe they come and then they go really quickly. Or they, in other words, you are reducing the impact of those emotions on you. No. Not only are you aware, as you experience the emotions, it tells you something about how you feel about the situation. But that also you are reducing their negative impact. So you are angry, that means, okay, something is upsetting you, so you may want to do something about it. But at least you don't stay angry all the time. No. Or you feel a bit depressed, then maybe it's something happening that require you to pay more attention to. But you don't have to feel that, oh, I will always be depressed. So with this first time meditation, this whole idea of ventilating, you are reducing the negative impact of your maybe more habituated emotional reactions. Right? But it doesn't mean that you don't have emotions, okay? And also not trying to suppress your emotional response, which is a good thing, because otherwise, no. What's the point of living when you just feel like a flat line like that? No, no up, no down, no happy, no sad, no nothing. No. Like that, no. Everything is like that. not a very nice state to be in, okay? Also not the aim. Right. So before I touch on the second type of meditation, any question? Do you notice your aware space is always here? Don't worry if you don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah. But anyway, I thought it's good to mention it, to give plant a seed that there is this other way of meditating, which is actually, when you get the hang of it, it's very relaxing. You hardly need to do anything. Right? It may take a while, you know, if you're new to meditation, to kind of, what is this aware space all about? You know? But sometimes, if you persevere with your own meditation practice, there will be occasion where you find that, hey, I don't have to, the meditation seems to happen by itself. You know, like, it's not like, oh, I must meditate, I must remember to come back to the breath, I must do this, I must do that. No, suddenly you become a little bit, you know, you relax into it and things just happen. You know, the breath comes and goes by itself. You know, occasionally thoughts arise. You know, some bodily sensations happen. You know, and all seems to happen within a space. And your awareness is suffused through that space. And just all this coming and going within it. All right. So if you didn't get it this time, not to worry. Maybe I didn't present it very well, or I don't have time, like, no, it's always rushing, yeah. But it can also happen naturally when the conditions are right, yeah. Okay? So I give the compulsory 5 seconds, no, so then I can move on. Yeah. My karma continue. I used to have this thing, right? My karma, because I attend other people's talk, right? Not in Singapore, like, okay. Talk. Then, oh, somehow they have, I don't know, yeah. But anyway, doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. So the second type of meditation, I've been introducing what we call in Pali, in the Indian language, the Brahma Vihara, which usually translate as the Brahma is the Indian god, right? A type of god. And Vihara means a dwelling, a bowl. So some people translate this as the divine abiding of the heart. So these four states of emotions of mind, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and we're going to look at the fourth, equanimity. It's like four different dwellings, four different places where your heart can reside in, can rest in. So your heart or your mind, your attention can rest in loving kindness, can rest in compassion, can abide within joyfulness, can abide in equanimity. And if your heart is filled with these emotions, this state of mind, it's as good as if you are living in heaven. You know, it's like the divine or heavenly abiding of your heart. So when your mind and heart is filled with kindness and love, you're already in heaven, right? Then, or with compassion or joy or equanimity. Or conversely, you know, if your heart is filled with anger, you're overwhelmed with depression, sadness, or anxiety, then of course it's not a very nice place to be, right? You know, it's not a very happy place to be as well. So today is equanimity, which actually is a difficult one. But these four, they are also related to one another, right? So there is a kind of relationship. Like for example, when you cultivate loving kindness, which asks you to focus on the positive aspect of a person, yourself or others, right? So because that invokes the sense of closeness to them, you know, a sense of love, care and concern. But sometimes doing that too much and you can get a bit distorted. Then you have this idea, you know, like when we fall in love, right, romantic love, oh, my perfect partner, the true source of my happiness. Of course, when you lose your true source, then you are devastated. You will never be happy ever again. You can never find that perfect person. Of course, then you flip, lah. Then you get hate. You hate. You can destroy this person. If I cannot get it, you also cannot get it. Yeah. And so sometimes when our cultivation of loving kindness get a bit distorted, not so much the love, we can get attached, right? Attached to a person. We build up an exaggerated perfect image of the person, which is not reality. Then it's good to focus also a bit on the more unpleasant aspect, you know. And that's when compassion comes in. When you can also be open, that any human being, we have good side, we have bad side, we have happy days, we have unhappy days. You know? And so compassion allows us to contact the other aspects of a person or life. You know, the suffering aspect, the unhappy aspect, the unpleasant aspect, the difficult aspect, right? So that helps to modulate our loving kindness and prevent it from falling into attachment, right? So then, but prolonged cultivation of compassion, for most people, they get a bit overwhelmed, you know? They suffer what is a modern illness called compassion fatigue, you know, because the too much, prolonged encounter with unpleasant aspects of life or pain and harm, for most people are a bit difficult. So we get a bit depressed. Say, oh, I cannot save the world. The world is full of suffering. Then you get a little bit low and down, right? Now you need the third one, joyfulness. You need to uplift yourself. You need to recover a sense of humor. You can see funny things even within a very difficult situation, right? So you need to lighten up a bit. So then you have joy, right? So that's the third one. And too much joy, right? Cheerful, cheer you up. They're a bit frivolous, you know, you not taking things seriously, always laugh at everything, this is funny, that is funny, everything. Otherwise people can't stand you. Right? So you need to chill, you need to calm down a bit. So you need to be equanimous. That is equanimity. Right? Now, equanimity is the difficult one, because if you're too much equanimity, you don't get it right, you become indifferent. You become cold, you're unconcerned, you're happy. Happy law, unhappy. Unhappy law, what has that to do with me? You become unconcerned, right? Very cold indifference. Then you need to come back to loving kindness. You need to put a bit of warmth, put a bit of care and concern and connection into it. So the four kind of help to balance up one another in our cultivation of it. Yeah. Right, so, as I mentioned, equanimity, the easiest way to misunderstand equanimity is to confuse it with indifference or unconcern. So a lot of people cultivate equanimity means happy, happy law, unhappy, unhappy law, alive, alive law, dead law. No. What has it got to do with me? Nothing to do with me, right? I'm equanimous. No. I don't get angry, I don't get sad, I'm not warm. No. So basically, that's why I call it flatlining. You don't feel anything. Or I used to joke about it because I have friends who, there's one of this kind of cultivating emotional balance. It's a kind of a program, you know, like certified, you know, you need to go to teacher's training to teach this course called Cultivating Emotional Balance. It's created by two. One of them is Buddhist, Alan Wallace is a famous Buddhist teacher, and the other one is a psychologist that specialized in study of emotions, Paul Ekman. So they come together to create this course called Cultivating Emotional Balance. So quite a few of my friends are, you know, involved in it. You know, I used to joke with them. I said, cultivating emotional balance, right? That is called, another word, called flatlined. You know, you go through this course, you come up, you don't feel anything. Balance, like perfect balance. Yeah, I'm just joking. Yeah, but in actual fact, it's not like that. Equanimity doesn't mean you don't feel anything, but it's a bit like what they call modulated. You know, when you're unmodulated, good things happen, you go all the way up. Then bad things happen, you go all the way down. And some people are like this, right? Their life is like after a while, very tiring. Just look at them, you feel tired, right? So overwhelmed with waves of emotions, you know, maybe happy one, not happy one, but it's just a little bit too much to deal with. So my version of equanimity is called modulated. A little bit happy, a little bit not happy. You know, there's ups and downs, but not extreme. You know, so that's what modulation means. You know, right? But I don't know whether it's correct or not, but that's how I explain it. So in life, you still have happy moments, unhappy moments. You still have loving moments, and there are moments, of course, you may be upset, you're angry, but they take place within a bit like, I'm a chemist by training, right? So the thing that comes to mind is this thing called a buffer. I don't know whether you heard of a buffer. in the chemical sense. A buffer is a solution where usually a buffer is to do with pH. So it don't get too acidic, it don't get too alkaline. You know? So if you add a bit of acid to it, it can somehow, you know, deal with it. You know? You don't sort of immediately get acidic or alkaline. But it's not a very good analogy, but it's the one that I'm most familiar with. So it's like you have an air cushion around you. You know? In life, you go through life with an air cushion, which things still affect you, but the impact is modulated. You don't get... You feel things, but the effect is more gentle. Right? And your response are also more gentle. And when things are more gentle, that means there's more chance to find the most appropriate response to things. Right? Good things happen, you can rejoice in it, but you don't get so excited that you have a heart attack and die from it. And bad things happen, you still feel the negative effect of it, and yet you don't feel devastated by it. And you still have a chance to find a way to best to react or respond to it. So that's my image of equanimity. So how to cultivate it? Difficult to understand, so difficult to cultivate also. As usual, I use words, right? And this one that's why I have more time. I need to explain it, because this phrases that I use is very Buddhistic, but a bit difficult to explain. So I recite in my mind, when I cultivate equanimity, this phrase: we are the owners of our actions. Our happiness and unhappiness depend on our actions, not merely on our wishes for ourselves. So this is like a general one. If I do it for myself, I would say, our actions, we are the owners of our actions. My happiness and unhappiness depend on my actions, not merely or not just on my wishes for myself. Okay? So in other words, if I want to be happy, I must make sure that I'm doing the things that are creating the causes for my own happiness. If I want to stop being unhappy, I must also choose the right course of actions to take so that I can step out of my unhappiness, or I stop creating the causes of my own unhappiness. There's no point just sitting there doing nothing or not changing anything and wish that I'll be okay, I'll be happy, or I'll stop being unhappy. Understand what I mean? Right. So that's why this is also a very Buddhist idea of karma. We are the owners of our actions. That our actions have consequences. Which happened to be a tagline of the new movie, John Wick the Third. I haven't watched the movie. I saw the advertisement. There is no Keanu Reeves as John Wick. I do not. It's a very violent movie, okay? And I think on the corner they say something like, our actions have consequences. I'm sure there is depending on how many people Keanu Reeves murdered inside that movie. Yeah. So the same idea. But you can also apply it to other people. And this is where usually the most problem happens. We are the owners of actions. Your happiness and unhappiness depend on your actions, not merely on my wishes for you. Now that is, some people find that very difficult. Sounds very shocking. Right? Someone that you care about, you love, their happiness and unhappiness, a lot of time depends on their own actions, the choices they make in life, their actions. Not so much to blame them, but it's to recognize that each one of us, we act in a certain way, or we fail to act in a certain way, and those have consequences, impact on themselves and ourselves. So sometimes, even though we love them, we care about them, we hold great hope or wonderful wishes for them, and which is good, wonderful things to do. But quite often that alone is not going to change their life around. They also need to make their own choices and hopefully the appropriate choices. Right? Now why equanimity has to do with this whole idea of actions and consequences and by extension responsibility and boundaries? Right? Like boundaries. Because quite often we are not equanimous when we fail to account for our actions or other people's actions. We fail to account for the consequences of actions. We fail to recognize the boundary of responsibility. Right? Like, my life is mine, right? My happiness, my happiness. So there is, of course, you can help me, I accept the help, and you can also harm me. But at the very bottom line, I also need to take responsibility for my life, for my choices, for what I choose to do or not do, for type actions I engage in, which may help me or harm me. Right? Actually, at the bottom is a very simple common sense idea. If I do the right things that bring happiness, of course, I increase my chances of happiness. If I engage in actions that harm myself, no, either I intentionally or unintentionally, then I cannot avoid the consequences of those actions and those choices. Right? So I want to help you, and quite often my actions may benefit you, but there are also many occasions where, despite the best efforts, you try to help someone. There are also other conditions that come into play, right? Conditions, you know, not within our control, but also some the choices and the habits and the actions of other people, they themselves, right? So when you recognize this complex situation, it's easier for you to find the sense of equanimity or balance within your heart, that you can love and you have compassion and you can help, and yet at the same time, you will not get too upset if the outcome didn't turn out the way you want it to be. Right? And usually that's where we get a bit caught up in, that the results are not what we want. That's where we despair. Right? Whereas instead of focusing so much on the results, focus more on the actions. You know? Right? Focus on what actually we can control. We can control our choices. We cannot control 100% control the outcome, because the outcome depends on a lot of factors. My actions, your actions, the weather, you know, or other complicated conditions within society. And so equanimity means coming back and recognize what we can do and what we cannot do, what we can control and cannot control, and out of it comes equanimity or serenity. That's why there is this famous, from the Christian background, the serenity prayers, right? I can't remember. It's like the courage to do, to change what I can change, and the serenity to accept what I cannot change, and the wisdom to tell them apart, right? So it's the same idea, right? So serenity, equanimity, have this idea to do with wisdom. Those things that we can control, we do our best to work on them. Those things we cannot control, we need to accept and acknowledge. And out of that, and be able to tell them apart, right? Out of that comes a kind of peacefulness, you know, a kind of mental stability and almost confidence to know that you have done, when you say, I have done my best, you have really done your best. And then the rest is just what it is. Okay? So, makes sense? Any objection? One of the most common objections is, but what about my prayers? No, I pray and pray and pray. I go here and pray, I go there and pray and pray and pray and pray. Surely my prayers work right. I pray to God, then I pray to Kuan Yin, then I pray to the Hindu God. No, I pray to Sai Baba. No, I pray to everybody. What about my prayers? Are they worthless? Useless? Of course I cannot say they're useless, right? I'll be murdered here. Yeah. But I think prayers are very important in some sense, yeah? But we mustn't only rely on prayers, right? In fact, the Dalai Lama is the one that always said, because I attend quite a lot of his public talk, and people always put in like requests, right? Please pray for world peace, pray for Tibet's freedom, pray for this, pray for that. Yeah. Then he always said, sometimes he forgot about it, then other time he said, oh, all right, let's meditate on compassion. This is the most interesting thing, you know, because normally in the West, usually this is happening in like Europe or Australia. What they mean when they say pray for world peace, usually like to keep a minute of silence, you know, like silent prayer. But the Dalai Lama often change it into something else. I think he likes to change it into compassion, because he ever says that given his background and situation, that, just prayers is not enough. You need to do something about it. And I mean, not necessarily just physically do something, but maybe you need to cultivate some heart quality, which is why he quite often silent prayer become meditating on compassion. After all, most of us, if you ask us to keep silence, we probably spend the whole minute thinking about all sorts of things. What to have for lunch later? Who I should meet up with? What's that got to do with world peace? Isn't it? But whereas if you spend a minute, just really bring to mind your understanding of compassion. Now, compassion, I think, when we genuinely embody it, contribute to peace, right? Maybe not world peace, but at least peace within our own family, our interpersonal relationship. Right? So what this verse that I've been talking about does not deny prayers or wishes or hopes, right? But is to focus on the importance also of our actions, our choices, right? And out of that comes equanimity, which is a very balanced, stable state of mind, usually related to wisdom, that sees very clearly, this is what I can control, this is what I can do, and this is what I cannot control, and I must accept. And out of it comes the sense of serenity. Right? Hope that makes some sense. Okay, so what we do is, as usual, we just repeat the phrases. This is how I do this meditation. And don't worry too much about what to think or what to visualize. Just stay with the phrases first. Try to get a sense of how you understand the meaning of the words. And then, in response to it, you will find that maybe your mind, your heart can come up with different memories or images in reaction to the fact that you are repeating and be mindful of these phrases. And as usual, I invite you to start with yourself first. So saying, we are the owners of our actions. My happiness and unhappiness depend on my actions, not merely on my wishes for myself. So you just say this slowly. You don't have to say it like saying a mantra like that. Don't have to keep repeating. Just say it, pause for a while, then say it again, and see how you understand it, see whether it resonates with you, see whether it triggers some thoughts or feeling within you. Yeah, and we do that for a while, and then we switch. Then here you think in relation to someone else, just think of one person, and then you say the same phrases, similar phrases. We are the owners of our actions. Your happiness and unhappiness depend on your actions, not merely on my wishes for you. Okay? And then you see what happened, what has been triggered. Right? Maybe you like it, you don't like it, you disagree with the word. You allow the different reactions to come forth, which give you an indication of how you think and how you feel at this moment. And then periodically you come back to the phrases and repeat them. Okay? And that is how we cultivate equanimity. So let's give it a try and see what happens. Alright, so as usual, just settle yourself back into meditation. So, first step, acquiring a seat. Give some attention to the seat that you sit on and the posture you adopt for meditation, because it really has a great impact on how your meditation will progress. So, choose a posture and a seat that allow your body to feel well-supported, balanced, safe, free of unnecessary pain and tension, if possible. And the second step, we're going to very mindfully, consciously give our body and mind the time and space to make transition, to put aside other things that preoccupy them, and slowly, gradually, at their own pace, allow them to settle into meditation. So, as usual, we can make use of the breath if you like, allow your attention to come back and rest on the breath sensations. And each time you feel an out breath, just remind yourself, your body and mind, to release. You don't have to worry how to release or what is being released. Just saying the word release, just allow for your body and mind to loosen up, to unwind, to maybe settle down. So coming back to the breath, making use of your out-breath as an opportunity to release. Maybe a good place to facilitate the release is actually with our face. Because so often, we do unconsciously tense up the facial muscles quite unnecessarily. So if you like, as you breathe out, see if you can release some of the tension in your face. Relax the muscles of your forehead if you find yourself tensing up the muscles of your forehead. Could be the muscles around your eyes, the muscles in your jaw. Let in a feeling of softness into the face, a feeling of ease and comfort into your face if possible. So coming back to the breath, each time you come back to the breath, feel that you are helping yourself to go deeper into your meditation. You're helping your body and mind to release unnecessary tensions, unnecessary agitation. The breath will always be here during your meditation. You can come back to it at any time, especially when we start the equanimity part of it. If you, at any point of time, you get a bit confused by what I'm saying or you're not quite sure what's happening in your meditation, no worries. Just come back to the breath, breathe out, release. And so for the third part of the meditation, we're going to focus on cultivating equanimity using a few standard phrases. So I recommend you start with the phrases I suggest, and as time goes by, you are most welcome to change them if you like. Starting with ourselves, we repeat in our minds slowly and mindfully the following phrases. We are the owners of our actions. My happiness and unhappiness depend on my actions, not merely on my wishes for myself. So I repeat, we are the owners of our actions. My happiness and unhappiness depend on my actions, not merely on my wishes for myself. Of course, you're most welcome to simplify and change it if you like. But as you say the phrases, pause a while, allow your mind some time to absorb the words, their significance, and see what happens. See how your body, your mind, your heart respond to the phrases that you are reciting. We are the owners of our actions. My happiness and unhappiness depend on my actions, not merely on my wishes for myself. So coming back to the phrases and repeating them at your own pace, slowly, mindfully. We are the owners of our actions. My happiness and unhappiness depend on my actions, not merely on my wishes for myself. So there are different ways to do this. You might want to reflect a little bit, think about it, whether you agree with it or disagree with it. Or other times, as you say the phrases, images, memories may surface, and you may want to pursue them a little bit in the light of the words, in the light of equanimity. We are the owners of our actions. My happiness and unhappiness depends on my actions, not merely on my wishes for myself. So coming back to the phrases that you are using, repeating them mindfully, slowly, and allow the words, the significance to penetrate into your mind and heart, and allow them to respond in their own way. We are the owners of our actions. My happiness and unhappiness depend on my actions, not merely on my wishes for myself. And then feel free to continue focusing on equanimity in relation to oneself, if that's what you want to do. Otherwise, you can try out in relation to someone else. Bring to mind someone you know. Have a picture of this person in mind. And then repeat similar phrases, directing the words towards this person. We are the owners of our actions. Your happiness and unhappiness depend on your actions, not merely on my wishes for you. So I repeat, we are the owners of our actions. Your happiness and unhappiness depend on your actions, not merely on my wishes for you. So as you repeat the words, direct it to someone that you know. See what sort of reactions may be triggered in you, what sort of thoughts may come forth. Feel free to engage it in your own way, explore it a little bit, the thoughts, the reasoning, or the feelings. And whenever you do get distracted, come back to the breath or come back to the words. We are the owners of our actions. Your happiness and unhappiness depend on your actions, not merely on my wishes for you. So coming back to your meditation, if you do find yourself very distracted, not to worry. Refocus your attention on the person you are meditating on. And just repeat the words, we are the owners of our actions. Your happiness and unhappiness depend on your actions, not merely on my wishes for you. Quite often, the words will trigger some feelings, some thoughts, some ideas. And just pursue them for a while. Become aware of what sort of reactions arise within yourself, or no reaction at all. And then come back to the words. We are the owners of our actions. Your happiness and unhappiness depend on your actions, not merely on my wishes for you. Okay, so there is a 15 minutes meditation on equanimity, just to give you a taste of it. Equanimity is a lot harder to even figure out what is it. And quite often when you do the meditation, other feelings are triggered instead of equanimity. You feel not very equanimous, especially one of the common ones is when people feel like they care for their children or their loved ones, and they're trying to do their best to help them or save them. And sometimes that is where it's really hard to draw the line, where is you draw it too close to yourself, you're a bit indifferent towards the loved ones. You draw it too close to them, there's a danger like you are infringing on their autonomy or their freedom. And so sometimes it's really hard to find where the boundary actually resides. Know how much to do and how, when to let go, and then how to deal with the consequence when you, one thing why we keep trying and trying and trying is to let go seems to be like to give up, and then you have to, you don't want them to suffer, right? And yet, and also to see someone that you love suffer and feel that there's nothing you can do, that helplessness is even worse, which is why we just keep do and do and do and do and do, even though when the person says, please stop doing, just leave me alone. Yeah. So that line is very hard to draw, which also make it quite hard to really feel or understand what it means to be equanimous. Right? So that's one of the difficulty of equanimity. But it is the foundation of the other three, love, compassion, and joy, built on equanimity, right, which can give them the strength, the great strength and stability. Right? So sometimes when you come across these four types of meditation, different teachers and lineages present them in different order. Right? Sometimes, even Tibetan Buddhist tradition quite often start with equanimity, then love, then compassion, then joy. Yeah. But personally, I find that very difficult because right at the beginning, it's very hard to even figure out what it means to be equanimous. It's actually a greater, more likely you become indifferent, you know, become very unconcerned. Right? And so I prefer this love, this order, love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. So there's no fixed rules. You can just switch them around and see what works best for you. Yeah. Okay, any questions? Any comments? Yeah, if you can, you can. Of course, they're all built on impermanence, or they can lead you to understand impermanence also. Yeah, the more we appreciate and understand impermanence and the possibility of change, you know, then the better it is, yeah. So emotions are also impermanent, right? Change, right? Of course, when you're in the midst of it, it doesn't look like it, lah. No, you look like, you know, you feel like you're always going to be like this, and you're always stuck with it. But nonetheless, they do change. When you fall asleep, they change, right? Not when you're dreaming, but when you're asleep, they stop, isn't it? So, which is usually why one of my solution for a strong emotional state is to go to sleep. Then maybe the next day when you wake up, you might have a different mood or different state of mind. You forgot what I'm so distressed about yesterday. Occasionally it didn't happen, no. But so it indicates that our emotions are impermanent. You know. Yes, that. I mean, no, there is no hard and fast rule. No, you can understand it in whichever way you want. I wouldn't equate the two words, equanimity and serenity, but my understanding is a bit different from you. No, I think because I see equanimity, it doesn't necessarily mean you are serene. Right, you can be experiencing some strong emotions. No, you are experiencing anger, or you find yourself feeling really depressed or really down. But it's equanimity for me is like a container. No, it holds whatever emotions. No, but it prevents them from spilling over. So they are somehow held. No, in this container of equanimity, and it supports them. But you give it a chance for them to calm down, you know, instead of overflowing all over the place. Yeah. So that's how I see it. But I do, maybe because of my training in Buddhism, we do distinguish equanimity from love. You know, from a philosophical point of view, you don't kind of like say, oh, equanimity is also love, is also compassion, also joy. Because then it makes the definition a bit messy, lah. No, but I think normally when we've experienced equanimity, we can also at the same time, there can also be love, there can also be compassion or joy. Like just now when the meditation, on one hand I can think of this person and I try to be equanimous about their experience, and yet at the same time, because I recollect their suffering, I also feel compassion. So I almost like I have two different feelings at the same time, equanimous and compassion, right? So that is also possible. Yeah.
Ah, yes. Yeah. So the first type of meditation, the one about the aware space. Yes, if you do that, and it's quite often you that leads you to a way of a form of equanimity, you know, because you allow things to come and go within the space, or even when strong feelings arise, you still are aware of the space within which the feelings comes and go. And that is one way of understanding equanimity. Yeah, definitely. And so that's also one way that people use. That's one meditation that they can use to cultivate equanimity from that perspective. And that is perfectly fine. No, so in a way today there are two meditations on equanimity, two different ways of coming to it. No, one is by way of awareness, of being in touch with awareness, and the other one is by way of these phrases, which is based on our understanding of how our actions have consequences. Yeah, and it's fine, they're perfectly fine. Okay. All right. So thank you very much for your attention. So this is the end of this course on working with emotions. So I must make some advertisement now, all right? So next few weeks, I start a new course, same time, same place, or maybe not the same place, but on power of visualization, I think. So that is, I would like to explore meditation that involve visualization, but not just visualization, but more like imaginations, using the power or ability to imagine, to visualize. And so there are quite a lot of meditation using that fall into that category. So if you are interested, you are most welcome to join in. So otherwise, conclude, but I must remind you my slogan about meditation. I have many slogans, right? So one of them is regular practice is better than irregular practice. I say regular practice is very easy to achieve, lah, you know. Every year on Vesak day, I meditate. It's also regular practice, right? No, regularity is powerful in its own way because it's habit forming. Right? Irregular practice means you feel like it, you practice, you don't feel like it, you don't do it, lah. But irregular practice is infinitely better than no practice. So having attended a meditation session, no meditation course, my hope is that you find meditation helpful, but meditation is absolutely useless if you don't practice. Right? It's not a medication, it's not a drug. No, you cannot like pop the pill, no, even the Panadol, even if you never take it, the first time you take it, there's some effect because it's a chemical, right? But meditation is not medication. Right? So the only way that it can help you is if you give some time, put some energy and attention to it, regularly or irregularly. All right, so I leave you with my slogan. Okay, thank you very much. Have a good weekend. Oh, and don't have to clear the cushions and the chairs. Yeah, yeah. Chair to move back. Okay, yeah. If you don't mind, help. Thank you very much.